The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. 2 Sundays ago, Reverend Terry Afori spoke of an African word that conveyed a concept of going back to find out what you left behind. In other words, dealing with the past as essential to healing and moving forward from past wrongs, mistakes, and failures. When it comes to Black history, this empowering process of engagement and reconciliation with the past faces increasingly strong headwinds in our country today, doesn't it? We're experiencing a reassertion of white supremacy and white nationalism. We're seeing a spike in hate speech and hate crime. We're witnessing a growing indifference, even antipathy, in our judicial system toward voting rights. These and other disturbing political and social influences threaten to undo decades of progress in addressing racial prejudice, discrimination, oppression, suppression, and violence. When it comes to racial equality and justice, we seem to have forgotten what we left behind, or at least what we thought we left behind. This morning, we'll revisit ourselves, significant periods and events in Black history, but in an interesting way, through the life and music of one of the most accomplished, innovative, and progressive musicians of the 20th century, Nina Simone. Her story and her music draw on, intersect, and intertwine with the story and the music of her race and the story and music of our country. From the Great Depression, she was born February 21st, 1933, to the dawn of the current century. She died in 2003 after a lengthy struggle with breast cancer. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. And on behalf of the fellowship, I welcome you this morning, you, whoever you are, from wherever you've come, wherever you may be on your life's journey, on your spiritual journey, whatever you must in conscience truly, responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you, we welcome and invite you to worship with us, with a faith community, exploring new paths to kindness and spiritual growth. A special welcome to you if you're visiting us for the first or the second time, or perhaps for the first time in a long time. If you're not already or not still connected with us, we urge you to fill out our virtual visitor's card. You'll find a link to that card in our Zoom chat box. You can fill it out anytime during the service, and it will afford you the opportunity to keep abreast of programs and activities here at the Thomas Paine Fellowship, like our worship services and the book discussion immediately following our service this morning. We begin worship this morning with opening words by the singer-songwriter herself, Miss Nina Simone. TPUF member, friend, and fellow music lover, Kay Stulegrass, will share Simone's words with us.
These are Nina Simone's words. Anything human can be felt through music, which means there's no limit to the creating that can be done with music. You can take the same phrase from any song and cut it up so many different ways. It's infinite. It's like God, you know?
Before we look back at the life, the times, and legacy of Miss Nina Simone, let's first light our chalice with words that remind us of the imperative to pass the legacy of truth and justice seeking from generation to generation. The chalice and the flame together form the symbol of our free faith. And we light our chalice this morning with words by the Reverend Douglas Taylor, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Binghamton, New York. Across the generations, we have carried the flame. We fought the injustice, sang the songs, spoke the truth, and built something lasting. We join in the line and we carry the flame forward. Across the generations, we have been nourished by this flame. We are singing new songs, breaking old barriers, sharing in the work. We join in the line and carry the flame forward. Across the generations, this flame comes to us. We are here for the songs, for the justice, for the community sharing the work. We are here now, too, to build something new and lasting. We are ready for a new day together. We joined in the line, and we carry the flame forward. This morning, as every Sunday morning, we light our peace lamp. Preston Lutlather will light our peace lamp in this dark time of the worst military conflict in Europe since World War II. As always, we light this lamp to remind ourselves of our commitment to affirm and promote our sixth UU principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
Our gathering song this morning is hymn number 151, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. The first recording of this song with lyrics, it actually had been written quite a while before as an instrumental piece, but the first recording of this song as a vocal was on Nina Simone's 1967 album, Silk and Soul. She accompanies us and leads us in this jazz gospel expression of our human longing for freedom of body and spirit, for the freedom to self-identify and express ourselves. The words will appear on lyrics on your screen.
Sing, 'cause I know how it feels. Oh.
As you could tell, as you were trying to follow along with the lyrics, that Nina Simone always took liberties with melody and words as well. It was just natural, kind of born in her bones from her time playing gospel organ and piano in black churches in North Carolina. Well, our time together this morning would hardly allow us to do justice to the early life of Eunice Kathleen Wayman, the girl from a small town in North Carolina, Tryon, the little girl who grew up to be Nina Simone. But I want to note a few important milestones in those developmental stages of her life and provide some insight into how they occurred and what they meant ultimately in defining her life and her career as an iconic figure in both music and in the struggle for civil and human rights. So let me start in the town hall in Tryon, North Carolina, where at the age of 12, Eunice Kathleen Wayman is to give a recital of classical music, including works by Bach, her favorite composer, Beethoven, Chopin, Czerny, and other great composers of the classical keyboard repertory. Now, how a young black girl in the Jim Crow South of the 1940s came to this moment is an incredible story. This shy, modest young girl, the sixth of seven children of a Methodist minister mother and a father, small businessman, handyman, and whatever to support a large family, grew up in a home and church environment that was rich in musical experience. And by the age of six, she was playing in churches and accompanying choirs. She would later write in her autobiography, I Put a Spell on You, that she overheard the word child prodigy in conversations about her. She barely understood what that meant. She would develop an aversion to being defined by others and to sacrificing herself to meet expectations others had of her, especially her mother. A white woman whose home her mother cleaned to earn extra money during the Depression had heard this six-year-old Eunice play piano and offered to pay for piano lessons for 1 year. And as chance would have it, a classically trained pianist, Muriel Mazanovich, lived nearby with her artist husband. I guess they moved there for the cheap real estate and the isolation where her husband could practice his art. Mazanovich agreed to take Eunice on as a student. Her talent became a community asset. A fund was created to support her musical education. In exchange, this amazingly talented child would perform in public concerts and other events in the community and surrounding areas. So there she is. She enters the stage, sits at the piano, and sees her parents, who had been sitting in the front row, being moved to the back of the hall to allow a white couple entering late to take the front row seats. She stands up and announces that if anyone expects to hear her play that day, her family needs to be in the front row where she can see them. Murmurs, nervous laughter. But eventually, her parents return to the front row and she plays beautifully. Now, fast forward to 1950. After years of hard work with little time for the usual diversions of childhood and young adulthood, she graduates first in her high school class and is accepted at a summer program at the prestigious Juilliard School of Music in New York City. The program is designed to prepare students for entrance examinations, that is performance auditions, at music institutes and schools. For her, for Eunice, it's the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, because the fund established for her is now nearly depleted, and her chance to continue pursuing her dream, or is it really her parents' dream, of becoming the first great classical pianist depends upon acceptance at this institute, which admitted students free, to attend for free. She's not accepted. For years afterwards, living in Philadelphia, Eunice seeks out a living as an accompanist at a vocal music studio, piano teacher, to make ends meet and have money left over to take private lessons with a man who would have been her teacher at the Curtis Institute, Vladimir Sokolov. She begins to take gigs at bars and clubs where she develops a reputation and a following, along with an expanding repertory that includes gospel, pop, jazz, even folk music, all infused with a style that is so eclectic and has all these elements of classical music in them and classical style. But to avoid being fired from her first club gig, she has to add vocals to her act, the owner tells her. So to avoid being fired, she starts to sing. To hide from her family, especially her mother, that she's playing the devil's music, she adopts the stage name Nina Simone. According to her account, an Hispanic boyfriend had nicknamed her Nina, little one, and she was intrigued by the work of French movie star Simone Signoret. So she bills herself as Nina Simone. But she's still holding on to that dream of having a career as a classical pianist. But then, well, let's listen to a recording of the song that was a turning point in her life and career. I Loves You, Porgy. Mike.
I love you. Don't let him handle me and drive me mad. If you can keep me, I wanna stay with you forever, and I'll be glad. Yes, I love you, Porgy. Don't let him take me. Don't let him handle me with his hot hands. If you can keep me, I want to stay here with you forever. I've got my man. When he calls me, honey, don't let him handle me and drive me mad. If you can keep me, I wanna stay here with you forever.
That was performed on the first album she ever recorded, Little Girl Blue. And there's a lot that went into this. She had signed a contract with a pretty shady producer who paid her $3,000. It's estimated that over the course of the next 30 years, that contract could have potentially deprived her of about $1 million in income. But when this a track from the album was finally released as a single, it was picked up by a Philadelphia DJ, Sid Marks, who, by the way, is still on the radio, right? And he absolutely was nuts about it. He gave it repeated airtime. At one point, he played it 4 times in a row. Other stations picked it up. Before long, her fame spread along the entire East Coast. And it's you can just hear from that why. There were some posts, comments on a post of this on the internet. Let me read just a couple. I guess I've been listening to Nina sing this song since I was 16 or so when I first discovered her, and I'm 74 now. Most of my life and every single time, my eyes really get moist. Every single time. When you leave a man who keeps hurting you and try to keep hope for someone who does not, this is what it sounds like in a woman's heart. And this, because the praise from musicians is usually the greatest of all. I've been a musician all my life, and sometimes find it hard to get old, fashion chills and inspiration from music. Having listened to and played so much of it, you do it enough, it can lose its mystery and mystique. Not so with Nina Simone. She can enchant anyone, anytime. Anyway, as a result of this, she was much in demand at the best jazz venues. And in September 1960, what a breakthrough. She performs for a national television audience on the Ed Sullivan Show. She had made it. No longer would she be performing for segmented and sometimes segregated audiences of jazz enthusiasts and people looking just for what's the latest, right? On the Sullivan Show, she performed I Love You Porgy and a jazz standard, Love Me or Leave Me, which proved that her years of training for a classical career had been well spent, and that she could mix musical genres and styles into a brand of music all her own. Something she would later refer to. When people, well, what kind of music do you do? She said, it's black classical music. So I really think it would be great to watch this performance, Nina Simone on the Ed Sullivan Show, doing Love Me or Leave Me.
I'd rather be lonely than happy with somebody else. You might find the night time the right time for kissing. Night time is my time for just reminiscing. Regretting instead of forgetting with somebody else. There'll be no one unless that someone is you. I intend to be independently blue. I want your love and I don't want to borrow. Have it today to give back. Your love is my love, there's no love for nobody else.
I intend to be independently blue. Hey, hey, I want your love and I don't want to borrow. Have it today to give back tomorrow. Your love is my love. My love is your love. Your love is my love. My love is your love. Your love is my
performance always leaves me breathless. You heard, of course, that incredible improvised riff echoing the fugal compositions of Bach, Simone's favorite composer. You know, in important ways, they shared a common approach to music. Recall her opening words with Simone expressing her belief in music as the language of feeling. Well, Bach and his contemporaries were advocates of the doctrine of effects, Affektlehre in German. This was a theory of the aesthetics of music that embraced the idea that music can arouse specific emotions in the listener, and composers should see their purpose as arousing those feelings. Also note that Simone talks about understanding music as a reflection of the infinite, of the divine. You know, Bach often noted on his scores the letters SDI or AMDG. SDI stands for the Latin phrase Soli Deo Gloria, translation to the glory of God alone, and AMDG stands for the phrase Ad Majorem Dei Gloriam, translation for the greater glory of God. And remember that Simone's earliest musical experiences involved church music. Her mother discouraged her and her siblings from listening or playing what she called real music. Why would you want to play music other than music praising God and spreading his word? Well, that became kind of important as we see the next phase developing in her career. As you can see from these performances and from the audience that she was commanding, she was at the peak of her career. But then something happened which changed the course of that career forever. And that was the civil rights movement. You know, by this time she was playing all over the country. She even played at the college campus where I was back in 1967, and I got to see her. But there was something missing in her life, and maybe it was that sense of purpose that she had felt when she was growing up. And the idea that I wasn't just playing to entertain people, I was playing to accomplish something important, that there was a cause. Well, the civil rights struggle of the 60s was what did it for her, right? I don't know if you had the moving experience of watching several documentary tributes to two Black activists who were so much a part of the struggle for equality and justice in the 50s and 60s. They were aired on PBS this week. Both of them were members of SNCC, SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. One was Fannie Lou Hamer, a sharecropper's daughter who became a leader in the struggle for voting rights in Mississippi and who was jailed and beaten nearly to death for her efforts. The other was John Lewis, who also suffered beatings and incarceration for his participation in protests and voter registration initiatives. I think all of us have seen at some point in our lives, I saw it on the news the night it happened, that footage of Lewis and other marchers trying to march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Georgia, being pushed to the ground and beaten mercilessly by Georgia State Police. Well, in April 1963, the violent terrorist attacks on innocent Black lives changed the course of Nina Simone's life and career. In June, Medgar Evers, Black activist and first field secretary of the NAACP in Mississippi, was shot down in the driveway of his home by a white supremacist who was part of an organization resisting integration mandated by the Supreme Court decision in Brown versus the Board of Education. The decisive moment came when Simone learned of the white terrorist bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. Parishioners were attending Sunday school classes before the start of their worship service when the bomb blast occurred. Beneath piles of debris in the church basement, the dead bodies of four girls were found. Addie Mae Collins, Cynthia Wesley, and Carol Robertson, all age 14, and Denise McNair, age 11, and a fifth girl, Sarah Collins, the younger sister of Adele Mae, lost her right eye in that explosion. More than 20 others were injured in the bombing, one of the many bombings of Black churches in Birmingham at that time. Rioting broke out in the city. Two more Black youths were killed. One was pulled off a bicycle by a white mob and beaten to death. The most common reaction across the nation and around the world was shock and outrage. Simone herself personally experienced a major meltdown. Now, I'm going to have to say, because we don't have time to get into it, but later she was diagnosed in life as having severe depression, in fact, as being manic depressive. This pushed her over the edge. Driven by anger, anxiety, and outright paranoia, she felt an uncontrollable need to take action, violent action. "I had it in my mind to go out and kill someone," she wrote in her autobiography. "I don't know who, but someone I could identify as being in the way of my people getting some justice for the first time in 300 years. Her husband found her on the ground in her studio where she had been preparing for a series of concerts at the Village Gate in Greenwich Village. She was anxiously fiddling with some pieces of metal. When he asked her what she was doing, she said she was building a zip gun. He reminded her that she had no experience whatsoever making or using guns, and he tried to calm her and urged her to channel her feelings into the most powerful weapon she had, her music. The result was four songs, the first of which, "Mississippi Goddamn," she wrote in 1 hour in mid-September, in September of that year. From that point on, with few exceptions, all the songs she composed would be protest songs. She became, as she put it, a rebel with a cause. She continued to perform other music, of course, in many categories and many styles, often blended together in what, as I said, she came to refer to as Black classical music. But her most creative endeavors were applied to the struggle for human and civil rights. Now, I'd like us to listen to the song "Mississippi Goddamn." It isn't the most endearing song, but it wasn't meant to be. And when she first performed it, announced the title of the audience, she looked at the audience and said, "And I mean every word of it." Can we roll? Goddamn, please.
The Mississippi bomb. Mississippi Goddamn is our last tune we had some requests for. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Can't you see it? I know you can feel it. It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's got me so upset, and Governor Wallace has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Hound dogs on my trail. School children sitting in jail. Black cat crossed my path. I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on the land of mine. We all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here. I don't belong there.
just the trouble.
Do so.
Washing the windows.
Do so.
Picking the cotton.
Do so.
We're just plain rotten. Try to say it's a communist plot. All I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. You lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady, and you'd stop calling me Sister Sadie. My country is full of lies. We are all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust nobody anymore. They keep on saying go slow. That's just the trouble.
So.
Desegregation.
So.
Mass participation.
So.
Unification.
So.
Do things gradually. Tragedy. Why don't you see it? Why don't you feel it? I don't know, I don't know. You don't have to live next to me. Just give me my equality. Cause everybody knows about Alabama. Everybody knows about Mississippi. Everybody knows about Mississippi. Go down. That's it.
Well, you can hear the anger and the, you can hear the rage. You can hear this plea, you know, for come on, somebody pay attention. Pay attention. God damn, somebody pay attention. The song was banned in the South, essentially because of the word God damn in it. Anyway, but what was happening, see, was that even while she was building this career as the kind of the high priestess of soul, which is a you know, appellation that was given to her when, as she was climbing through the ranks and recording music from the American Songbook, like I Loves You Porgy and so many other things, Love Me or Leave Me. But she was also rubbing elbows in Greenwich Village with Bob Dylan, with Joan Baez, with Odetta, the black folk singer, and with the intellectual elite of the black community. She became friends with Langston Hughes, the poet of the Harlem Renaissance, friends with James Baldwin, one of the great authors of that period, and with Lorraine Hansberry, the black woman who became the youngest and the first ever black to be awarded the New York Critics Circle, Gold Circle Award for her play, A Raisin in the Sun, which I'm sure you say, I've heard, well, that where's that phrase from? It's from Langston Hughes' poem, What Happens to a Dream Deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, right? So there you have it. And at the same time, she even canceled concerts in Greenwich Village at one point to fly down to Montgomery to be at the end of the march from Selma to Montgomery, where there was to be a concert. Some 40,000 people attended that in the pouring rain, but they couldn't even fly into the airport at Montgomery because Wallace, Governor Wallace, had sent tanks to block the airport. Had all kinds of vehicles, so they couldn't land. They had to land somewhere else and take a bus to perform. But throughout this thing, she became so acutely aware of what she described in her autobiography as the what had been pushed aside when she was growing up. She said the Wayman Way, her family in Mississippi, was to essentially be, you know, a part of the community, the segregated community, not to make waves, to be hardworking, God-fearing people and go about their business as if the reality of discrimination, of the reality of segregation, the reality of implied and actual violence against Black people didn't exist. Well, that all changed. And when she became friends with these intellectuals of the Black culture movement, and also with all these people who were doing things in other genres of music that were groundbreaking. Anyway, what happens at this from this point forward is really kind of interesting. She had a lot of problems in her personal life, brought about by psychological issues, but also by the stresses of a career. Her marriage fell apart. Her daughter, Lisa Simone, was pretty much a neglected child and suffered some awful abuse at the hand of her mother and so forth. As part of this, Nina Simone got introduced to the movement, which maybe some of you remember this, of kind of like going back to your roots in Africa. She had gone on a culture tour with Langston Hughes and James Baldwin to Africa under the auspices of the American Society for African Culture. She made contacts there and she traveled a great deal. She lived in Barbados for a while. She lived in Africa for a while, particularly in Liberia. And eventually, she became pretty much a, could you call it an expatriate. She wound up living in Europe. She actually died in France at a chateau in southern France, where she lived the latter part of her life. And throughout all of that, her music still was played, and she did appear at jazz festivals like the Montreux Jazz Festival and so forth. But there were things that she was doing which didn't really become understood until really late in her career, and people began to look back at what she had done. And one of the things that happened was that a song that she called Four Women, which had been written during that same flurry of activity that produced Mississippi Goddamn and so forth, came about. She also had composed a song performed a song composed by a member of her band upon the death of Martin Luther King. It's called Why the King is Dead. Jean Taylor, as I said, one of her band members wrote this song, and she performed it 3 days after Martin Luther King died. And I think before we go into that last phase of her life, I think it would behoove us to listen to Why the King is Dead.
Of course, this whole program is dedicated to the memory of Dr. Martin Luther King. You know that, maybe. Once upon this planet Earth lived a man of humble birth, preaching love and freedom for his fellow man. He was dreaming of the day peace would come to earth to stay, and he spread this message all across the land. Turn the other cheek, he'd plead. Love thy neighbor was his creed. Pain, humiliation, death, he did not dread. With his Bible at his side, from his foes things he did not hide. It's hard to think that this great man is dead. Oh yeah. Well, the murders never cease. Are they men or are they beasts? What do they ever hope to gain? Will my country is it too late for us all? And did Martin Luther King just die in vain? Cause he'd seen the mountaintop. And he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think, cause we're headed for the brink. That he is dead. He was for equality for all people, you and me. Full of love and goodwill, hate was not his way. Seen the mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think and feel. Are we headed for the brink? What's gonna happen now that the king of love is dead?
Well, we know what happened in the aftermath of the assassination. Violence, a great change in the civil rights movement from this pacifist or gradual change to a more revolutionary fervor that brought us groups like the Black Panthers and so forth. Simone became kind of disenchanted with the Black leadership in the 70s. And although she still carried so much weight in the Black community, Stokely Carmichael had dubbed her the musical voice of the civil rights movement, and added to her title of High Priestess of Soul. And anyway, she had composed a song that actually brought her too into the kind of, how could you put it, the realm of those who were talking not just about Black
liberation, but about women's liberation, particularly, and as it applied to the double whammy that a Black woman felt. And I'd like to play this song. I know we're running a little bit late here, but I think it's worth hearing her song, For Women. This song actually had created a great deal of reaction in the community, and some of it was not so positive. They said, oh, you're promoting stereotypes of Black women. And as many times in her life, she was saying, no, you don't understand what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to say, this is how we have been stereotyped. This is how we have been viewed, right? Take a look at yourself in the mirror, and what do you think? And in about a year ago, a play was produced called Nina Simone for Women, which kind of brought these characters to life in a very, how could you put it, lively debate about Black identity. But let's hear Nina Simone's For Women.
My skin is black. My arms are long. My hair is woolly. My back is strong. Strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. What do they call me? My name is Aunt Sarah. My name is Aunt Sarah. Aunt Sarah. My skin is yellow. My hair is long. My father was rich and white. He forced my mother late one night. What do they call me? My name is Sophronia. Been rough. I
Well, anyway, I think it's time now for Matters of the Heart. And we do have a little interlude while you think of what you would like to say if you choose to participate. And it's a instrumental recording of Nina Simone's a song from Carousel, which I know you'll recognize. We had opening words by Nina Simone, and these would be closing words. It's a little clip of an interview with her in which she's asked to explain what she means by freedom.
Sure. Can we?
Well, what's freedom?
What's freedom mean?
Yeah.
Same thing it is to you. You tell me.
No, no, you tell me. No, no. Because I've been talking for such
just
a long...
just a feeling. It's just a feeling. It's like, how do you tell somebody how it feels to be in love? How are you going to tell anybody who has not been in love how it feels to be in love? You cannot do it to save their life. You can describe things, but you can't tell them. But you know it when it happens. That's what I mean by free. I've had a couple of times on stage when I really felt free, and that's something else. That's really something else. Like like, I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear. If I could have that half of my life, no fear. Lots of children have no fear. That's the closest way, that's the only way I can describe it. That's not all of it, but it is something to really, really feel.
No fear. What a great definition of freedom. As Kay expressed her fear about what's happening in this country, as people in Ukraine have lots to fear, you know, what is freedom? No fear. I'm going to extinguish our chalice and then we'll have our closing song, a song that Simone wrote in memory and honor of Lorraine Hansberry, her friend. Lorraine Lansbury and she became very close friends, and they would talk for hours, sometimes say almost all night. And in describing the conversation, she said, oh, we talked about things, you know, revolution and Karl Marx, you know, girl talk. And and Lorraine Hansberry introduced her to a whole different way of looking at the world. And the phrase "to be young, gifted, and black" actually comes from the title of a book that was published posthumously, of writings of Lorraine Hansberry. And it came also from a speech. Lorraine Hansberry was dying of cancer in the hospital, but she got out of her hospital bed because she was invited to address a group of Black students who had been awarded prizes for creative effort. And she started her talk to them by saying, "I'm here today. I've come here to address you today because you are young, gifted, and black." So let's sing along with Nina Simone, her tribute to Lorraine Hansberry and her encouragement of people of all races, including her own, to realize their potential.
Extinguish the chalice, but not that light of truth, justice, which we carry with us into the world to share with those whose lives we touch and whose lives touch us.